My name is Cedric Richardson from Illinois Radio Reader. You are listening to Disability Beat on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
My name is Vicki Nicewander, but I'm very happy to have this hour today because we have some stuff going on in the state of Illinois that is not too pretty, and have had just finished a conversation with Tony Pawlowski, the executive director of the Arc of Illinois, kind of filling us in on what the prognosis is for people who are providers of individuals with disabilities or people with disabilities or their families. And things are not looking really great in that area. But we have one more expert on the show today. Ralph Martiri is the executive director of the Center for... Ralph, you're going to have to help me out here. It's the Center for, and I lost my paper, Tax and Budget Accountability, correct?
Correct. Got it right.
Okay, good. And Ralph, you know, when I told people that you were going to be on the show, they all said, oh, man, that's a real catch. Ralph Martiri, he's the guy you want to have on the show. So I have great and high expectations for you today, Ralph.
Well, I certainly plan on letting you down in every count.
Okay, well, you know, maybe it would help, and I don't know that we've had a whole lot of conversation on our station about the issue with the state budget, but if you could just summarize a little bit of what's been going on over the past 6 months or so, that might be a good starting point.
Well, what's been going on over the past 6 months or so is actually not very relevant to the state's fiscal condition. I mean, it's been a lot of posturing between the governor on the one hand and the speaker on the other hand, and not very much of it has been based on what's really going on in the state's budget. So rather than focusing on that political shoot and match between those two individuals, I think it's more important to focus on what's really happening in the state. And I think that's a lot more sober. So what most folks don't know is the state's general fund, which is the budget that they're fighting over right now, is the fund that goes to covering the primary core services people expect. $9 out of $10 from that fund go to education, healthcare, social services, and public safety. And so that being how the money gets spent, when you have a significant deficit in your general fund, which the state does, you see those core services erode in communities across the state. And this erosion has been going on not just this budget year, but since at least the beginning of the year 2000. In fact, from 2000 through last fiscal year 2015, which just ended, we've cut spending after you adjust for inflation on those four core services by almost 30%.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Now, we've cut that spending on core services at the same time we had a temporary tax increase. So you would think, gee, our budget should be rosy today, right? We had money coming in. We were cutting spending. So net, 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 should we be out of our fiscal problem? And the answer is no. Because literally every dollar that was raised, the temporary tax increase that was passed a couple of years ago and began phasing down on January 1st of this year, every penny went to just two things, paying past due bills and then covering the growth in the state's debt service costs, and primarily debt service the state owes to its pension funds. So that brings up the current, one of the big third rails of politics, and that's the pension. The way this is covered in the media, you would think that state workers, teachers, social workers, et cetera, get to retire and buy their own Cayman Island. And that's really not the case. The average weighted benefit across all the state's public pension systems that's actually paid out is around $38,000-$39,000. Teachers get a little bit more, about $48,000-$49,000, but they're teachers. It's a pretty important position. But the real bottom line I'm trying to emphasize here, Vicki, is that the benefits provided through our pension system are anything but Cadillac. They're quite pedestrian. They're average benefits. And to top it all off, not just average benefits, but for the most part, in fact, 78% of the state workers that receive a pension from the state of Illinois don't get Social Security because the state does not participate in the Social Security program. So this is their entire retirement benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So what's been going on for generations in Illinois is decision makers have borrowed against what is owed to the pension system, and rather than put in what's owed, they've simply taken the revenue they should have put into the pension system and used it to cover the cost of delivering current services. So for some 50, 60 years now, taxpayers in Illinois have been consuming education, healthcare, social service, public safety services without paying the full cost thereof in tax. Now we are at a point in time where we're paying back what was borrowed from the pension system. So literally, every dollar from that temporary tax increase went to paying other past due bills and the growth in the debt service owed to the pension system. And to be clear, it's debt service driven. It is not benefit driven.
So how much money are we talking about that has to be paid back into the pension system to make it whole?
Oh, they're underfunded right now by about $111 billion. Now, that sounds like a lot of money.
Yeah.
But, you know, everyone doesn't retire at once, and you don't close the systems down. So the number sounds a little scarier than what it really is. And you have a period of time to pay it off. Now, actuaries would like this entire unfunded liability be paid off in a 30-year period. But we just don't have the tax revenue to do that in Illinois. Even if we increase taxes, even if we go back to the income tax rate that pertained when we had the temporary tax increase, we still wouldn't have adequate revenue to pay back these bills in 30 years, particularly based on the way the repayment plan was designed. Back in 1995, which is the law we are living under that covers this repayment schedule, they passed a bill that basically said, you know what, not only aren't we going to really repay much on that debt for the next 15 years, we're going to continue to borrow. And then magically, around the year 2014, 2015, we're going to start putting in $4, $5, $6, $7 billion a year and growing it every year thereafter. So backloaded in the payment plan that it looks like a ski slope in out years. Payments approach $16 billion a year. So it was never designed to actually be funded. It was really a political dodge. And it's that really significant year-to-year growth in debt service passed in a 1995 bill that had nothing to do with actuarial principles, nothing to do with actually funding the pension system, simply a political dodge. It's that crazy payment schedule that's creating all this pressure on the fiscal system and sucking up all our resources. And it's that payment schedule we have to fix.
And it sounds like from your description that this, you say it's been happening for decades. So my guess is that this is including both Republican and Democratic governors.
Oh, yeah, this is a bipartisan thing. It really hasn't mattered who's controlled the governor's office or who's controlled the General Assembly. The consistent decision has been made by policymakers to say, hey, we know the state needs more tax revenue to afford its current level of services. In fact, at least since the late 70s, early 80s, there's been university research that has shown that every single year, because our tax policy isn't designed to work in a modern economy, but our costs at a minimum of providing services will grow with inflation driven by the modern economy, right? Every single year, service cost growth increases at a rate greater than what revenue will cover, even if no services are added or expanded, merely based on inflation and population changes. So that mismatch between service cost growth and revenue growth has really been what has driven decision makers, be they Democratic or Republican, be they governors or legislators, to borrow against the pensions to as a real means to politically avoid dealing with tax policy, because no elected official really likes to go back to their constituents and tell them what they need to hear rather than what they want to hear. And what they need to hear is Illinois is an incredibly low tax state that underfunds services and has been cutting its expenditures on services. And the only way we could afford an adequate level of investing in our communities, investing in our schools, investing in those social services that care for vulnerable populations, the only way we can do all that is, in fact, if we raise taxes. And no one's had the political will to make that case on a consistent basis, and that's what has led to these problems.
Well, in fact, they just got rid of the tax that was a temporary tax.
Which blew a $4.7 billion hole in the current year budget.
Mm-hmm. How helpful was that?
Yeah, not so much. And so let's put some context to these numbers. So last year, 2015, the fiscal year that ended just about a month ago, our fiscal years begin on July 1st. So fiscal year 2015 ended on June 30th of 2015. It began on July 1st of 2014. In that fiscal year that just concluded, we spent about $35 billion in total through our general fund. About 10 or 11 billion of that, however, was on things like debt service and statutory transfers out. So not on providing those current services. That means only about 24 billion went to current services, where 9 out of 10 dollars covers education, healthcare, social services, and public safety. So now you're talking about 24 billion in expenditures on those core services. And the accumulated deficit that we had built up, even with the revenue from the temporary tax increase, was in excess of $6 billion last year. So if you divide 6 by 24 to just figure out what percentage of your expenditures are deficit spending, you get to about 26, 27%. So even in last year's budget, our deficit spending was covering about 27% of the services being provided. And these are core services. Well, this year they let $4.7 billion in annual revenue go away. So you've just taken a $6 billion problem and you've made it a $10 billion problem. That's almost half. You're running almost a 50% deficit in your general fund spending. That's clearly not sustainable. And when I hear people in either party, frankly, say, well, it's not about the revenue, it's about spending, whatever, I think one of two things. They're not really looking at the numbers, or they don't understand how to do math.
So what if you were governor, and I've actually heard a couple people say, I think Ralph Martiri should be governor. You don't sound too excited about that.
I'm happy to run for governor the second they put $20 million into my campaign.
Or more.
Well, that's my starting point. Okay. That'll get me in. I'll be willing to form an exploratory committee for $20 million.
Okay. So say you were governor. What would you do to fix this?
Oh, you know, the solutions are actually pretty obvious. And there are very few options that can deal with this problem, okay? So you'd have to look at your core revenue sources, and that's your income and your sales taxes. And I'd make a couple of adjustments there. The income tax, I would bump the rate back up to maybe from its current level of 3.75%, which is the lowest in the Midwest and in the nation effective rate. Let that rate bump back up at least another point to 4.75%, may even go back to 5%. That'd be the first thing I would do. And that generates a relatively significant amount of revenue. Second, there are 41 states in all of America that actually have an income tax. And of those 41, Illinois is one of only three that excludes all retirement income from taxation. You just can't leave that out of your tax base. There's too significant of an exclusion. I mean, so much wealth now is concentrated in people at or beyond retirement age.
And that's going to become more and more prevalent as the baby boomers age, right?
Right. People like me. I'm 55, soon to be 56. And you know, I'm aging rapidly and frankly not very well, and I plan on being a burden to my children and others. But this taxing retirement income, it's a really crucial piece to help, you know, solve our fiscal problems and tax where incomes are being concentrated more and more in the modern world. But that said, we also have a very unfair taxing system overall. So you don't want to harm low-income seniors, fixed-income seniors, and there's very much a doable way of designing a tax on retirement income that leaves these fixed-income seniors alone. And so we've run one way of doing that, and that is pretty simple. If your adjusted gross income from all sources is $50,000 a year or less, we let you keep the full exemption. So none of your retirement income will be subject to tax. If you then are between $50,000 and $75,000 a year, you lose 25% of your exemption, and others will tax 25% of your retirement income. You keep three-quarters of your exemption. And it goes on like that. So no one in Illinois would pay the state's income tax, which is, let's say we bump it up to 4.75%, would pay that income tax on all their retirement income until their annual income was over $150,000. So it's a very fair way to do it. You're not going to harm low-income seniors, fixed-income seniors in any way. No one could even make the claim that you could. Yet it generates significant revenue for the state. That would generate over $1 billion at the 4.75% to 5% rate.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's the sales tax. 45 states have a general sales tax, and ours is the most narrow base, meaning it applies to fewer transactions than any other sales tax in the nation. Why is that? Our sales tax focuses pretty much only on the sale of goods, hard physical things you could touch, like, you know, my shoes, your pants if you're wearing pants, your skirt if you're wearing a skirt, whatever. Hard physical items you can touch. That's what our sales tax applies to. What it doesn't cover are services, things like haircuts and lawn care and health clubs and bowling and auto repair. So if you go to the auto repair shop, you pay a sales tax on the parts that you buy, but you don't pay any sales tax on the labor. It's that kind of thing. Well, leaving services entirely out of the tax base is a loser proposition, and here's why. Currently in Illinois, only 17% of our state's economy is made up of the sale of goods, what we do tax. Over 72% of our state's economy is the sale of services, what we don't tax. Mm-hmm. And leaving the largest and fastest growing segment of your economy entirely out of your tax base is a prescription for fiscal failure, and that's precisely what we are seeing. So I would expand that sales tax base to include just consumer services. So not business to business, not health care, not professional. Just those kinds of things I was talking about before, things like haircuts and bowling and health clubs, those kinds of things. That would generate $2 to $2.5 billion in revenue that would grow with the economy. So now you've done your major tax policy revenue enhancers. You want to make tax burden a little fairer in Illinois. The ideal way to do that would be to have a graduated rate income tax where you have higher rates applying to your higher levels of income and lower rates apply to lower levels of income. And in a perfect world, that's what we would do. But you and me, Vicki, we do not live in a perfect world. We live in Illinois.
Yeah.
And Illinois has a constitution that requires a flat rate. So the way you design around that from a fiscal policy standpoint is to provide targeted tax relief to low and middle income families through things like a refundable tax credit, like the earned income tax credit, for instance. And so you provide tax relief solely to those folks you want to cut the taxes of, and this would be low to middle income families, whereas you leave the taxes pretty much intact on higher income individuals.
Let me see if I understand this correctly. So what you're saying is to get around the constitutional requirement for a flat tax, you raise the flat tax for everybody and then give people with lower incomes tax breaks.
Correct.
I don't think that's the way a lot of people in the House and Senate want to do business. What I'm hearing is they think that big business people need to have those tax breaks.
Yeah, well, you know, I know there's a number of folks that honestly believe that, although I don't know what they're reading, because there's absolutely no evidence that supports any correlation that's statistically meaningful at all between providing tax relief to upper-income individuals and or businesses and creating jobs or growing your economy. And literally every peer-reviewed study of this subject has come to the same conclusion, in that there's really no correlation at all between your state tax policy on wealthy folks and on the businesses, in fact, in general, and job growth. Other things matter far more, like if you're Texas, whether or not oil is doing well, or if you're Florida, you know, whether the weather holds up, whether housing prices stay low, and whether people still want to visit that very famous mouse. You know, it's those kinds of things that really drive your economy. Your tax policies are it's just not a major factor at all. In fact, has no statistically meaningful relationship to your economic growth. So what you need to do with your tax policy is design it the way the textbooks say you should design it. And in fact, it's a core component of capitalist tax policy that you design taxes to focus on more affluent folks and leave lower and middle-income folks with lower tax burdens. I think the exact language in The Wealth of Nations, the tome written by Adam Smith in the middle 1700s that invented capitalism, right? I think the exact quote is, taxes ought to be designed as much as possible to remedy inequality of riches by relieving the poor and burdening the rich. This is a capitalist principle of tax policy. So, once again, I don't know what those folks are reading. I don't know what research they're looking at, but it's clearly flawed. And if you don't want to believe all this that I'm putting out there now, just look at Kansas, right? Kansas and Governor Brownback made the case, hey, we're going to cut taxes and we're going to watch our economy grow. We're going to cut taxes on business. We're going to cut taxes on the affluent. They're the job creators, blah, blah, blah. And ever since Kansas did that, their economy has fallen behind their neighbors and the nation. They've not created jobs. In fact, they've lost jobs. And they've blown up their deficits and had to cut their investment in education. So it's really, if you want to take an evidence-based approach to your tax system, you design a tax system that's fair in that it imposes a greater burden on those that can afford it at the top of the income ladder, and it reduces taxes at the bottom and middle. And that, unfortunately, is not what we do in Illinois. There's one other piece, though, of the fiscal puzzle that really has to be done, and we've talked about it a little, Vicki, but we need to really emphasize it, and that's re-amortizing this debt that's owed to the pension system. Mm. Really, what's killing the state is this unrealistic, unaffordable growth in annual repayments to the state pension systems for money that was borrowed that, frankly, no tax policy could ever support. What we need to do is pay that money back, but pay it back in a rational fashion. We've run some numbers that show if you go to a level dollar payment, much like a mortgage, right? So most people's mortgages don't jump in the amount they have to pay every year in significant amounts. It's the same amount we pay every year.
Right.
If we refinance the state's debt that's owed to the pension system the same way, right, and stretch the payment period out a little longer, we couldn't pay it all off in 30 years. It takes about 42 years. But in 30 years, we'd be healthy. We're very close to healthy. We'd have a 70% funded system. You're technically healthy, according to the Congressional Budget Office, at 80%. And instead of having this constantly growing pressure, that level dollar, that same flat payment that remains consistent over the years, that same flat payment, in real terms, after inflation, becomes a diminishing obligation for the state. So those steps solve all our fiscal problems. A minor increase in the state's income tax rate, an expansion of the state sales tax base to include consumer services, including some retirement income in our income tax base, and re-amortizing the debt owed to the pension system.
So what state is doing it right?
Well, I could say that most states do it far better than us. So we rank at or near the bottom in the nation in tax policy. You look at a number of states that have much better fiscal systems. You got to look at Minnesota. You look at, in our neighboring states, you look at Minnesota has a much better fiscal system than us. Wisconsin has a much better fiscal system than us. You go to the East Coast, Massachusetts, Maryland, these states do a really good job. And it's not really that what you want to do is clone the specific policy of another state. What you want to do is take those principles of sound fiscal policy. There's four of them. You want your taxes to be fair to people, responsive to the economy, stable during poor economic cycles, and efficient. You don't want to distort private economic behavior. You take those four principles of how a tax system is supposed to work, and you apply them to your state's economy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need to do in Illinois, and that's what we haven't done in Illinois. And it's a very solvable problem. I mean, the amount of revenue we need to raise sounds like a lot, somewhere in the $5.5 billion range, which is a lot of money in new revenue, but we have a $720 billion state economy, so it's less than 1% of the economic activity in our state. So a tax increase at around that level, coupled with the reamortization of the pension debt, allows the state to eliminate its accumulated deficit within a couple of years, and in fact, year three, year four, start increasing its funding for things like education and social services, which have been significantly underfunded for the last 15 or 20 years or so.
What are the chances that any of that is going to happen in Illinois?
Well, you know, you have a job like mine, there's two things is true. You're always hopeful and drink a lot. So ignoring the drinking a lot part of my job, I am hopeful that there will be a grand bargain structured that gets us close to hitting a number of these major items over the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's going to happen during the current hissing match between the governor and the Democrats, and particularly the speaker, or if it'll take a year or two of fighting it out back and forth. But I know that there's support in the General Assembly for taking this kind of approach, that's a more evidence-based approach. And that support, frankly, does cross party lines, although certainly more Democrats support taking that type of position than do Republicans. There are a few Republicans who get it and have indicated in the past they'd be willing to vote for these kinds of changes in tax policy if, in fact, you could put together a bipartisan group of legislators committed to doing the right thing as opposed to taking pot shots at each other and gaining some sort of political advantage.
Right. And so, obviously, the chances of all of that happening are not really good. What's your prediction on how long it's going to take to settle the impasse on the budget?
Oh, I have no crystal ball there.
That's exactly what Tony said. You said you didn't hear the first half of the show.
Well, anyone that's been paying attention, I mean, you ask the legislators that are intimately involved in the negotiation, and they don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I sure hope it gets resolved soon, because there are going to be a lot of people who get hurt if it doesn't.
Yeah, I think that, Vicki, you're making really the strongest point, and that is the whole concept of a civil society involves making adequate investments in the front end to do things like educate all your children, not just those fortunate enough to live in affluent communities,